sick and tired of hearing things from uptight, short-sighted, narrow-minded hypocrites. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. I've had enough of reading things by neurotic, psychotic, pig-headed politicians. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Today you'll hear the speech given by Peter Dale Scott on September 12, 2010, at the 9th anniversary of 9/11 conference in New York City called How the World Changed After 9/11. That will be followed by some facts on Egypt and the revolution taking place there. One of the demands of the Egyptian people is that the government remove the state of emergency that has been in effect since 1981, when Mubarak took over after the assassination of President Anwar Sadat. Keep this in mind as you hear Peter Dale Scott talk about our national state of emergency put in effect after 9/11. It's called Continuity of Government, or COG. It's still in effect, going on 10 years now. All of the infringements to our civil liberties, and of course the wars, have been justified, and I would add falsely justified, by 9/11. So let's get started with Peter Dale Scott. He's being introduced here by Brian Madden.
Professor Scott has researched and written several investigative books on the deep state and deep politics, which he counterposes to the public state and its public politics. He's responsible for the phrase deep politics. Scott is the founder of the Coalition on Political Assassinations and the Peace and Conflict Studies program at UC Berkeley. His most recent book, The Road to 9/11, deals with historical and geopolitical context of the events of 9/11 and describes how U.S. foreign policy since the 1960s has led to partial or total cover-ups of vast and past domestic criminal acts, including perhaps the catastrophe of 9/11. Peter also is an accomplished poet and the recipient of the Lenin Poetry Award in 2002. Welcome, Peter.
I'm old enough to remember the beginning of the anti-war movement back in 64, 65. It was a tiny group of people. We thought we were nothing. And then, of course, by 72, we were a million people. And I'm seeing the same thing happen in events like this one or in Santa Cruz last May and before then, that I heard myself being called a conspiracy theorist by a lot of peace activists whom I respected. But now, increasingly, I feel that the center of gravity of the real anti-war movement is here with us and the people who say we are conspiracy theory nuts because we say the perfect truth. We don't know for a fact what happened on 9/11. That the only thing we know for a fact is that there's been a serious cover-up. People have perjured themselves in front of the 9/11 Commission. We have to look into this. This is going to be the mainstream. And what I really like about this event and the Santa Cruz one before it is the diversity, the different elements of society that are coming together, because for right and left, we see that we have a problem in Washington. And the problem is, if I may mention my next book, which will be out next month, called American War Machine. We are approaching this subject with love in our hearts, not with hate. What we love is the hopes that existed for this country. Like when I came here in 1960, the gap between wealthy and poor was diminishing. There's something called the Gini ratio. It was comparatively good in this country. It was going down. And then in the wake of the civil rights movement, of the Detroit riots, California really scared people, and they elected a governor, a movie actor, a B-movie actor, by the name of Ronald Reagan. And I say they, because Ronald Reagan didn't pick himself for that job. He was selected. He was put in front of the curtain. And while he was put in front of the curtain, they set up something with the California National Guard and working it together with the Pentagon. The California program was called Cable Splicer. That's what I want to talk about today. Working with Garden Plot in the Pentagon. Garden Plot was their name for what was a real plot, a real conspiracy theory. How many people in this room have heard of those two names? Well, a fair number. What I'm really going to talk about today is the big news event, and it's the same topic, the big news event of this last weekend, while the headlines were about an idiot in Gainesville who would or would not burn a Koran. Meanwhile, very quietly, how many of you heard that President Obama, as could have been predicted, renewed the state of emergency in this country? They had to do it because it's a one-year thing, and I'm going to read from a notice that came out of the... I don't know if it's in any newspaper or not, but believe me, from my point of view, this is the most important event of the weekend, except it's a kind of a non-event, because by this point we know that we are living in a state of emergency that was proclaimed on September the 14th, 2001, and I'm reading from the notice here, by Proclamation 7463, that was Bush in 2001. There is a statute, the National Emergencies Act, which I will come back to, that says you can only proclaim an emergency for a year, and so every year since then, they've been renewing it. And a former congressman, Dan Hamburg, and I, back in 2008, when Obama was elected, we appealed to Obama, don't renew it. We appealed to Congress, you can stop it. Let me read, first of all, what this proclamation, this is now Obama on Friday. Consistent with Section 202D of the National Emergencies Act, I am continuing for 1 year the national emergency previously declared on September 14th, 2001, with respect to the terrorist attacks of September the 11th, 2001, and the continuing and immediate threat of further attacks on the United States. In other words, we're going to continue the war on terror because we had the shoe bomber, we had the underwear bomber, and for that we've got American troops in 100 countries. We are fighting two wars, and we're going to keep on doing it. And even more important, and this brings us back to Garden Plot and Cable Splicer, because the terrorist, Obama again, because the terrorist threat continues, the national emergency declared on September 14, 2001, and the powers and authorities adopted to deal with that emergency must continue in effect beyond September 14, 2010. Okay, what are those powers? Well, we have a short name for them, though it's very misleading, where they're called continuity of government powers, COG. And I have said from the first time I ever mentioned it, the first description we ever got in the press of these powers were for suspension of the Constitution. Well, I would call that a change of government, not a continuity of government. And I'm afraid I'm not going to get in great detail of what the COG regulations are because of the fact that it is so secret that nobody can talk about them. But I can say something more about the National Emergencies Act. That was a progressive act passed by, as a result of the Church Committee after Watergate, when we got the so-called post-Watergate reforms. This was one of them. The point of the act was not to be able to declare an emergency, but to set limits to an emergency. You know, let's be fair, every government has to have some kind of planning for emergencies. In Britain, it's mostly what we call the prerogative, that the Crown can do what it likes when the situation is acute enough. We have that in Canada, but in America, they like to plan things, and they've been planning for response to nuclear attacks since the early 50s. I think you all know that they've hollowed out a couple of mountains up near Camp David. Did you know that Cheney went and lived up there for 90 days afterwards? I'm going to, well, let me read. I think I've got to that point. That, first of all, Cheney ran the government for a day and he told Bush to stay out of Washington. That was a COG provision, that the president and the vice president should not be in the same place in an emergency. You could say that's reasonable, but this is what Cheney then did. It makes you realize it was fairly big. Cheney jumped into action to ensure continuity in government He began immediately to create his shadow government by ordering 100 mid-level executive officials to move to specially designated underground bunkers and stay there 24 hours a day. They would not be rotated out, he informed them, for 90 days, since there was evidence, he hinted, that the terrorist organization Al-Qaeda, which had masterminded the attack, had nuclear weapons. Well, talk about conspiracy theories. The shadow government, as a result, needed to be ready to take over the government from the bunkers. Well, for 90 days, 100 people worked full time, perhaps not 24 hours a day, but certainly full time. And we don't know what they did, but first of all, from what we know from descriptions of the continuity of government planning going back to the Oliver North era, because this was one of his major scandals, that he was working on these plans to suspend the Constitution. How many of you remember the Iran-Contra hearings? And what happened in the hearing was Congressman Jack Brooks' first question, Colonel North, in your work at the NSC, were you not assigned at one time to work on plans for the continuity of government in the event of a major disaster? And then the shit hit the fan. The counsel for North, a man called Brendan Sullivan, a civilian, not in the government, but he knew what was coming up here. He jumped to his feet, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Chairman. And the chairman, who was a Democrat, and not a terrible Democrat, Inouye, said, I'll quote a bit more from Brooks. I read in Miami papers, this was a good story by Alfonso Chardi, that there'd been a plan developed by the same agency, a contingency plan that would suspend the American Constitution. And I was deeply concerned about it. Wouldn't you be? This was a plan that had been over at that point. The hearing was in 87. They'd been working on it for 5 years. It's very interesting that it was set up by just a private act by the president, not by an act of Congress. Congress was totally cut out of this. They were given the authority to plan for the suspension of the Constitution, originally in theory for a nuclear attack. Now, maybe you could justify that in a nuclear attack, but what happened in the Reagan administration is that they shifted into... It was no longer planning. This became official at the end of the Reagan administration, not for a nuclear attack emergency, but for any emergency. And that's why they had the power to invoke it, as they did invoke it, on September the 11th, 2001, not just on the day of the attack, but before 10 o'clock in the morning, before the last of the four planes had hit the ground. Cheney, probably was a result of a phone call with Bush, they had invoked these mysterious continuity of government regulations. I can give you a long version, but the short version, what we know from the reports in the 80s, three things we've become very familiar with: warrantless surveillance, warrantless detention, and third, and I think perhaps most important, and I hope you're aware of this, and this would go back to cable splicer and garden plot, plans to militarize the government of this country. Are you all aware that in 2002, without consulting Congress, they created something called NORTHCOM, which is responsible for America in the same way that SOUTHCOM is responsible for South America and CENTCOM is responsible for Central Asia? They have the same powers that they're using to control and manipulate people in those countries are being used against Americans. There used to be something called the Posse Comitatus Act that said only in extreme emergencies could you bring in the troops to run the country. And that's been overridden not by a new act. Congress has been let out of this scene just simply by a stroke of the pen. And I have to say the same thing has happened in Canada. And now I have my own minor grievances during the Vietnam War. My FBI file, not very long compared to my friends, it was 985 pages by 78. But I didn't feel too bad. I didn't be too upset it was the FBI or even the CIA, which I know that my file went to the CIA. I don't know what happened to it there. I didn't feel like as if I was in the Soviet Union and I would just disappear someday or be shot in a street or anything. But it's changed now. Now the military and private corporations like SAIC Corp. How many of you have heard of SAIC Corp? This is a private, what I call intelligence company. They've outsourced intelligence activities. I don't trust these private people. They meet regularly. And some of these people are working for the military. Some of these people are working for SAIC. They were complaining last night that people don't go out in the streets. Well, you go out in the streets now, and they'll meet you with military weapons if necessary. The last big protest in Pittsburgh, if you didn't get out of there, you would be deafened for life by the new machines. They've developed them for Iraq, and they're using them in America because we have military government in America. So I want to tell you what the National Emergencies Act says very explicitly, and it was chutzpah of Obama to incite it. Congress is required by law to examine the emergency that has been proclaimed and either authorize it or terminate it. And as I say, Dan Hamburg and I asked Congress to do this in 2008, 2009. We only got one response, and it was the congressman. He said, oh, that old act, that has been overridden by the provisions of, guess what, continuity of government. Which, if you wanted proof that the idea of the legislature determining the laws of the country being superseded or overridden by a private group. Cheney and Rumsfeld were planning these things when neither of them were in the government. Cheney was head of Halliburton. Rumsfeld was head of G.D. Searle, a pharmaceutical company. And the two of them had the power to come and make plans which they themselves implemented so that the law of the land, including the law about emergencies, has been superseded. We don't just want to stop a war in Iraq. We don't just want to stop a war in Afghanistan. We want to stop the war on terror, period. Because we have to see that clearly. And if we're serious about stopping the war on terror, the very first step is to insist, as conservatives of the Constitution, that Congress do what the law requires it to do, and at a minimum debate this emergency and the supposed importance of it, and we should be continuing to apply pressure for them to terminate this thing. There are a lot of things others have to be terminated too. The Patriot Act, which appeared, a 1,000-page act, appeared out of the woodwork instantly. Overnight, the same way that the Tonkin Gulf Resolution appeared out of Lyndon Johnson's pocket after the Tonkin Gulf Resolution. There's a great deal of similarity between these two things. That is now the law of the land. Tonkin Gulf Resolution had two votes against it, but it was a bad resolution and was ultimately repealed. The Patriot Act had only one vote against it. The country is not going in a good direction in this respect. And she, Barbara Lee, my representative from Berkeley, cast her vote more or less by accident. She hadn't had time to check with the Black Caucus. But it's a bad act, and the first thing to do is just repeal it the way they repealed the Tonkin Gulf Institution, and then you have to have some kind of emergency planning and sit down and do it in an open way and do it with contributions from the outside. Don't do it with a secret committee privately set up by a private act of Reagan. And I want to quote what CNN said about it in 1991, and they hadn't even come into power yet, but they said, this is CNN back in November 1991. There was a partial release. By that point, they'd spent $1 billion on COG planning because they had people up in the air for 24 hours a day and so on. And CNN said, in the United States federal government, there is a super secret agency that controls this shadow government. And the shadow government being a government which was preparing to take over. This was back in 1991. They weren't in power until the implementation of COG on 9/11 and the proclamation of the state of emergency, which continues that. These two things, I'm a conspiracy realist, not a theorist. When I tell you those things are there, you're not going to read about them in the press. And when Jack Brooks asked his question and Inouye said, well, we may have to go into executive session on that, meaning, yes, there's something there, we're not going to talk about it. None of the mainstream media talked about it. I didn't talk about it because I read in Chardy's story that the whole plan had been effectively killed. The New York Times reported in 1994 that it was all over. All that was over was the nuclear planning. But the COG planning continued with Cheney and Rumsfeld, neither of them in the government, with a budget of $200 million a year. This is not small-time stuff. So when the deep state is not my phrase, deep politics is my phrase, the deep state is a phrase that comes from Turkey to describe where you have a second government which works with drug traffickers and mafias. And if somebody says something you don't like, you go out and kill him. And that's what Aja was, one of those killers. That's a deep state in a different sense from what we have in this country. But we have had, for 20 years, a parallel institution planning for a radical change in this country to move the curtain forward, so to speak, so that a lot of things, how we respond to these various things, is no longer the business of Congress. In fact, in 2007, Bush, when he renewed the proclamation of emergency for 1 year, he put it into the White House. And so that you can't even FOIA to it, because Cheney came up with this idea that the White House isn't part of the administration and isn't covered by FOIA. So they have been moving the blanket of secrecy more and more over these things, all in the name of fighting a war on terror, which should end. And I will just end with some. How many of you remember Peter DeFazio in 2007? When this was, by the way, a successful action by 9/11 truthers. He's from Oregon. There are a lot of 9/11 truthers in Oregon. And they said, Congressman DeFazio, this proclamation says there's an annex with some secret orders providing for continuity of government. You should find out what those are. And Peter DeFazio was on the Homeland Security Committee. So yes, it seemed to be his responsibility. He was told he couldn't see them. So he went back and got his chairman to write an official letter where the committee said they wanted to see these orders, which might or might not be suspending the Constitution. Wouldn't you think that would be the business of Congress to know if the Constitution is being suspended or not? And they were told, again, that they had no right to see it. So that is visible proof that the way this government has been run for years and years has changed. As I say, our enemy is not America, because America is a country where the civil rights movement succeeded, where the women's rights movement made great progress. It is possible to see change in this country. It has become very, very difficult since about 1970, because you have very rich people. The Koch brothers, for example, producing. It's not just the Koch brothers, but it's less than 10 billionaires who have put collectively with their corporations privately about $1 billion a year. That was the estimate back in 1980. $1 billion a year to make us walking zombies, not aware of what's going on in this country. I believe in America in the sense that I believe this movement can take on that kind of opposition. And I think the Achilles heel is that we are the defenders of the Constitution, they are the opponents of it. And I think Americans, there's a lot of Americans out there who love this country and will learn to understand that they have to get behind us in saving what we can of the Constitution that gave rise to it. Thank you very much.
Again, that was Peter Dale Scott speaking on September 12, 2010 in New York City. I would recommend reading his book, The Road to 9/11. I've been trying to figure out what's really going on concerning the situation in Egypt. I applaud the Egyptian people for their courage and determination to take back their country from the U.S.-supported dictator Hosni Mubarak? I did some research, and I'm going to share some of what I discovered. Nothing is as it seems on the surface. So let me start with Hosni Mubarak himself. He was a career officer in the Egyptian Air Force, serving as its commander from 1972 to 75. He then became the vice president of Egypt in 1975 and then became the fourth president of Egypt in 1981 after the assassination of President Anwar el-Sadat. And this is what an article on the website rebelnews.org has to say about him. The Egyptian dictator has been America's most reliable, read pro-Israel, ally in the Middle East for 30 years. Mubarak has blocked much-needed relief from reaching the besieged Palestinians of Gaza, who share a mostly closed border with Egypt. I also learned that the U.S. gives $1.3 billion to Egypt each year, mostly in the form of military aid. And according to an article in the UK Guardian written by Ewan McAskill on February 4th, 2011, the U.S. and Egyptian armies are closely intertwined, not just through military aid, but joint training and exercises. And as you already may know, Egypt is one of the places that the U.S. has sent people to in secret renditions, and the Egyptian government is known to be a brutal regime that employs torture. In doing my research, I was surprised to discover two articles stating that Mubarak has cancer. One was by United Press International, posted on July 19, 2010, stating the following. Egyptian President Hosni Mubarak is thought by intelligence agencies to be dying of cancer affecting his stomach and pancreas, the Washington Times reported. U.S. and Western intelligence agencies determining the 82-year-old leader was terminally ill have been watching for a transition of power in the Middle Eastern nation that is a vital U.S. ally, the Times reported. Then I was really surprised to discover this article from the Daily Telegraph, written by Tim Ross and posted on January 28, 2011. The title, Egypt Protests, America's Secret Backing for Rebel Leaders Behind Uprising. The American government secretly backed leading figures behind the Egyptian uprising who have been planning regime change for the past 3 years, the Daily Telegraph has learned. The American embassy in Cairo helped a young dissident attend a U.S.-sponsored summit for activists in New York while working to keep his identity secret from Egyptian state police. On his return to Cairo in December 2008, the activist told U.S. diplomats that an alliance of opposition groups had drawn up a plan to overthrow President Mubarak and install a democratic government in 2011. Referring to secret U.S. diplomatic dispatches released by the WikiLeaks website, the article goes on to say, the U.S. government has previously been a supporter of Mr. Mubarak's regime, but the leaked documents show the extent to which America was offering support to pro-democracy activists in Egypt while publicly praising Mr. Mubarak as an important ally in the Middle East. The documents show that the activist has been approached by U.S. diplomats and received extensive support for his pro-democracy campaign from officials in Washington. The embassy helped the campaigner attend a summit for youth activists in New York, which was organized by the U.S. State Department. And here are some other points of interest. Omar Suleiman, the new vice president of Egypt, was formerly the head of intelligence and has strong ties with the CIA and U.S. military. Frank Wisner, who was sent to Egypt on January 31st to advise Mubarak, has CIA connections, was former vice chairman of AIG, and was director of Enron. He's also employed by the law firm Patton Boggs, who does business with the Egyptian military. Wisner is the former ambassador to Egypt from 1986 to 1991. According to the New York Times, Mubarak was lobbied furiously by Wisner and other diplomats in the Obama administration to resign and appoint Suleiman to take over as interim president in Cairo. And I'll close today's show with this quote by F. William Engdahl in an article called Egypt's Revolution, Creative Destruction for a Greater Middle East. As real as the factors are that are driving millions into the streets across North Africa and the Middle East, what cannot be ignored is the fact that Washington is deciding the timing and, as they see it, trying to shape the ultimate outcome of comprehensive regime change destabilizations across the Islamic world. This concludes this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Thanks for listening. And power to the Egyptian people.